Warren Buffett, BlackRock, and other institutional players dominate investments in commercial aviation. Why? Because it's one of the most profitable and predictable alternative assets that exists. And it's not tied to other markets, such as real estate and the stock market. Is it safe? Well, imagine triple net leases to the likes of American Airlines and British Airways. Income is contractual and guaranteed by some of the biggest named airlines in the world. That's why this kind of investment was never available to the ordinary accredited investor. That is until now. Visit accesswealthaviation.com and check it out for yourself. Invest in an institutional team with over 200 plus years of combined investment experience in the aviation sector. Conservative investing with double-digit returns and tax advantages. That's accesswealthaviation.com, accesswealthaviation.com.
You are listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast with Buck Joffrey. Get ready to change your life.
Welcome, everybody. This is Buck Joffrey with the Wealth Formula Podcast, coming to you again from Santa Barbara, California, in my COVID recovery. I am still recovering from COVID, so please excuse any gaffes. And I know in my emails I've got some typos and stuff like that. Any oddball things I might say, I'm actually on some steroids that do not, they make people a little different psychologically. So if I say something wacky, then tag it up to the steroids, right? As an update on my progress, I am about now 10 days out from positive COVID testing. I'm guessing I probably had this thing for at least 4 more days. About 14 days out. Overall, relatively stable right now, but I've been dealing with something that many COVID patients see called the cytokine storm period. Sounds scary. It kind of is scary. At a high level, what this means is the virus ramped up my immune system big time. So my battle now is really less with the virus and more about fighting off my own immune system from trying to wreak havoc on my own body. Anyway, that's why I'm on the steroids that suppress the immune system at this point. And hopefully by next week's show, this whole thing will just be a bad memory. In the meantime, though, I want to thank again, hundreds, maybe even 1,000 of you have reached out to wish me well. I'm very touched by that. I especially want to thank some of my physician colleagues. And I say colleagues, but they're really members of this community because it's not like I'm working with them. They're people who are across the country who've literally, you know, been helping me on my care. And there's just too many to mention each and every one. But I do want to mention in particular, Patrick Troy in Hartford and his colleagues. He's been on the phone with me every day. He's been looking at my labs. He's been looking at CT scans that I've had to have. I live in a small town with not a lot of big gun pulmonologists and ICU docs like Patrick and his team. So having this kind of community has had a greater perk than just the financial stuff. So again, thank you to Patrick. And this morning, I sent him my most recent labs, and he said they were starting to look boring, which is good. And he added that he knows that I like boring. Of course, he's right about that. He's referring to my investment philosophy of boring is good. Now, I do feel a sense of responsibility once again to give you this public service announcement, and hopefully it's meaningful to you. Avoid this virus like the plague. And that's kind of funny to even say because the plague is actually caused by a bacteria that is actually pretty easy to treat. This thing is not easy to treat because this thing sucks and it's scary. And I can't tell you how many frightening stories I've heard in messages from you guys, you know, sending me about like otherwise healthy guys, you know, my age, doctors, et cetera, you know, around the country who just kind of get it and they got no other problems and they die. You know, so do what you can. And I'm horrified that this is a become a political issue. I mean, it's just downright crazy to me. I see these congressmen that when they were huddled down in the Capitol, that a number of them refused to wear masks. And I just don't get it. To me, it's just unbelievable that simple task like that to potentially protect your fellow man becomes a political issue. And these are times that I think we'll hopefully look back as some very dark times. But this is about, you know, protecting other people as much as yourself. So just, you know, it's not that big a deal. Wear a mask. And the other thing is, get vaccinated when you can, because I guarantee you that whatever side effects you have, whatever evening side effects you get, it's better than what I'm going through right now. Okay. Anyway, just some more thoughts here broadly on the virus. I've been thinking about, it is absolutely mind-boggling to me that a virus that started in the wild animal meat market with like bats and stuff from Wuhan, China, that's what's created this havoc in my body in Santa Barbara, California. Kind of gross, actually, to think of it that way. It's kind of nasty, but it's true. And I do hope that at some point the world stands up more aggressively to the Chinese government to regulate these places. Listen, this is not the first killer virus to come from these places, these meat markets, the wild unregulated meat markets over there. And you know, if you watch some of these documentaries on you know, some of the food processing, et cetera, that's going on there, I mean, that is, there's just this massive pandemic ready to break at any point from China. And the irony of it is that to this point, the viruses that they have unleashed on the world before Corona, before COVID-19, were too deadly to really significantly create a pandemic scenario for the rest of the world. They just burn themselves out because people die when they get it. Well, that's great, you know, but they got to do something, because this is, otherwise it's just going to happen again and again. And it's probably not going to be the last global pandemic we have. I mean, I'm hopeful that it's the last one of the next, you know, 100 years. But I don't know, unless they do something to change. I don't see it. The globalization plus their sort of, you know, unwillingness to really take next level precautions and regulations on this is pretty pretty astounding to me. And I do hope, again, that the world stands up to the Chinese government more aggressively. But what can they do? You know, that's the thing. It's, you know, they're a world economic power. And you can't exactly sanction them to death like Russia or Iran. You can't really do that, right? Yeah, but you can shame them. And the Chinese do care about their reputation on the world stage. They want to be recognized as, like, you know, as being on par in all ways with the United States and Europe. And, you know, I think if they are shamed into, you know, regulations, I think that's our best bet. So hopefully they do that. One last thing on COVID, and then we'll move on to more lively topics, I guess. I found it very interesting today. I saw an article in the Los Angeles Times that reported 1 in 3 of LA County residents are estimated to have COVID-19. So they've had it. I mean, that's 3 of the 10 million people in that population. So it's not surprising that I guess I got it, because people down in LA County keep coming up to Montecito in Santa Barbara because they want to get away from LA, and they're bringing this stuff with them. So anyway, the good news is that if there's any silver lining to that story, it's that if 30% of the population is already previously infected, theoretically, you know, it's easier. It's going to be easier once the vaccination gets rolled out to obtain, you know, some sort of herd immunity, because you won't, you're targeting the 70% who's not infected. That's not to say people aren't supposed to get vaccinated if they have it. Apparently, still are, and I will do that myself. But you know, it certainly helps when you know you're targeting 70% of the population now, and if you can get, you know, you get 80-90%, 80% of those 70%, that's still pretty good numbers to overall have. Anyway, so that's my daily COVID commentary, and we'll leave it there. I do want to make sure that I continue to provide you with the kind of financial information that you know, you expect from this show, which you should. It's a financial show. So today, we're going to go jump into a topic that you can sink your teeth into. It was pre-recorded, obviously, before my my COVID stuff. So I can actually, you know, talk normal in it. We're going to talk about in this interview about the different options that you have when you have capital gains. Now, the tricky thing in this space, I have to tell you, is that, you know, it's like anything else, right? I mean, the truth is that everybody's going to tell you their product is the best. And, but the reality is that there's no one size fits all when it comes to the issue of capital gains. And you really want to hit the topic, you know, on the options from A to Z. And so that's why I asked Brett Swartz to join us. And, you know, he's pretty well versed on this stuff. Obviously, he has, you know, his own specialty in certain types of this, but he's, you know, provided a nice interview and broad perspective of the different things that are available to you. Once you listen to this interview, though, come back and make sure you don't tune out after the interview itself. We're going to talk a little bit more about Bitcoin and asymmetric risk strategies. And so, yeah, we'll come back right after these messages with Brett Swartz.
Worried about saving too little too late for retirement? The Wealth Accelerator may be exactly what you need. With the help of some of the oldest and most reliable insurance companies in the country, Wealth Accelerator allows you to take most of the upside of any good year in the stock market and use bank loans to magnify those returns significantly. And what if the stock market has a bad year? No need to fear. Wealth Accelerator is engineered so you don't participate in the losses of the market, no matter how bad of a year it is. Sounds too good to be true, right? But it's not. It's simply the same financial engineering that the ultra wealthy have been doing for years. Now it's your turn. Check it out for yourself by going to wealthformulabanking.com. Again, that's wealthformulabanking.com. Self-storage is a necessary evil. It's where you keep your stuff and forget about it. No wonder this stuff is so profitable and recession-resistant. The Wealth Formula community, well, we've benefited from that. We've made lots of money in this space with Reliant Real Estate, one of the largest self-storage companies in the country. With an average investor internal rate of return of almost 34%, with hold times just over 3.5 years, these guys know what the meaning of velocity of money is. If you're an accredited investor, make sure to check out what they're up to right now at ReliantFund4.com. Again, that's ReliantFund4.com.
Welcome back to the show, everyone. Today, my guest on Wealth Formula Podcast, he's been on our show before. His name is Brett Swartz, and he is the CEO of Capital Gains Tax Solutions, which every year equips hundreds of business professionals with deferred sales trust tools to help their high net worth clients solve capital gains tax deferral limitations. His experience is very broad in this space, including deferred sales trusts, Delaware statutory trust, 1031 exchanges. We'll talk about all those. He also has sort of frontline experience as a real estate broker himself, having done about $85 million worth of transactions. So he's actually been down in the pits as well. Brett, welcome back to Wealth Formula Podcast.
Buck, thanks for having me. Pleasure to be here.
Well, it's good to have you back. Lots of things changing, but I thought it would be a good time for us to, you know, kind of talk about, you know, the various options that people have, at least currently. And part of what we may discuss a little bit is if there's anything changing, or, you know, what we think may happen with the new administration, et cetera. But why don't we just start out a little bit, just, you know, I want to get into the meat of it and, you know, use this as an opportunity to sort of educate broadly on this topic. Your business focuses on pretty much sort of a deferral or potentially sort of a practical elimination of taxes legally after some sort of liquidation event, right? Isn't that in a nutshell what you do?
Correct. Yeah. Most high net worth individuals selling a primary home, business, cryptocurrency, investment, real estate, they struggle with capital gains taxes. It's somewhere between 30% and 50%, depending on the state you live in and the depreciation recapture. And so we use a deferred sales trust to give them a chance to, what I like to call, have a transformational exit plan and not using a 1031 exchange. Yeah.
So let's go through the different options because, you know, I think it's important to understand historically the concepts that are out there. You know, what's appropriate, because there's still times of various different types of options are going to be appropriate. And then, you know, and then kind of finish up with, you know, kind of what you do most of, which is, as I understand it, the deferred sales trust. So the one that we know, I think most people have heard the most about is the so-called 1031 exchange. Do you want to talk a little bit about what exactly a 1031 exchange is?
Absolutely. So 1031 exchange is one of the most popular, and it's a great tool to defer capital gains taxes on the sale of investment property. There's some rules. You need to buy like-kind investment property within 180 days of closing. And so it's very, very, very common for commercial real estate investors to use that. Of course, there's some inherent limitations, and I like to call this more of the transactional type of exit planning, where you're just kind of trading one thing for another, and it may or may not really transform what you're truly looking for. And I like to use the analogy, Buck, of Blockbuster. I don't know if you remember the days when you went to Blockbuster and you had to return the movie within 3 days, and if you didn't rewind it, you got a fee. And even if you showed up, the movie may not be there. That's kind of like the 1031. You have to typically overpay for properties, you know, sell high and buy higher 180 days later, which is what our parents taught us not to do, right? Taught us to sell high and buy low. So the 1031, unfortunately, puts a lot of pressure on a lot of clients. And that's where I've been personally with clients in the past. And part of what happened in the 08 crash was people had overpaid. And so the 1031 can be a big challenge for that.
Got it. And so, you know, and some people may be trying to understand like, okay, well, when would you really use a 1031 anyway? And here's an example. We use it obviously a lot in real estate, and particularly because we tend to depreciate our properties so much, right? So I've heard some people say, oh, you know, with bonus depreciation, you don't really need a 1031 anymore. Well, that's not really necessarily true. You know, in some cases, you may have a property that, say, you bought for $1 million, you took depreciation and your basis is down to like under $100,000 after 20 years or something crazy like that. And the next thing you know, you're going to sell it for $5 million. And so the problem in those situations is that if you sell it, you're not only paying the capital gains, but you're also paying recapture on all of that depreciation that you've taken during that interim. And that is one of the really powerful things about a 1031. Fair?
Yeah, it is. And so just to clarify, just so your listeners know, in a 1031 exchange, your depreciation schedule travels, which is not a good thing. And so let's say you've owned a multifamily property for 27 and a half years, and you've taken straight line depreciation, you'll have a zero basis at that point.
Yep.
So if you were to do a 1031 the old way, which is Blockbuster, your old schedule travels, which is not good. The solution to that is what I call the Netflix, which is the deferred sales trust. You can get a brand new depreciation schedule buying that same deal that you would have bought. But if you just pit stop and stop on the trust, and then partner with the trust and buy that brand new depreciation schedule. So that's the way we really like to coach clients through.
I want to make, and we'll get there in a second, but I want to give sort of a broad landscape first. So that's the 1031. And as you mentioned, you carry that depreciation schedule with you, which is not ideal. But on the other hand, you know, the real estate the real estate motto on this has always been, at least from the recent, you know, based on what tax law currently is that, okay, I'm just going to keep 1031 exchanging, because even though that thing essentially travels with me, at some point I'm going to die. And if I, when I die, then the basis resets. That's in a nutshell what that theory is, right?
Exactly. Drop until you swap, right?
Right.
And swap until you drop.
And swap until you drop. Going. Exactly.
Yep.
Mm-hmm. Now, a Delaware statutory trust, talk a little bit about that, because I want to, again, not, I'm definitely going to get to your thing, but I want everybody to know, because all these things, you know, even Delaware statutory trust gets confused with deferred sales trust because it's DST. It was DST, right? Well, which one? So what's a Delaware statutory trust?
Yeah, so it's just another form of a 1031. So it's part of the IRC section 1031. So I like to call it 1031 DSTs, right? Mm-hmm. So essentially you're selling your investment property, typically a private investor who wants to get rid of the toilets, trash, and liability. And you're moving into typically a big group who has a it could be one, two, or three properties. It could be more, but generally they already have closed the assets and you can exchange your equity, your interest into their deal. Some of the challenges, you give up all control typically, and typically it's illiquid for 7 to 10 years, typically very high in fees. I've closed those for clients and they do serve their purpose, especially if you have what's called a mortgage over basis issue, which we're doing a partial Delaware and a partial deferred sales trust coming up here in the next few days. And so they have their place. The key is what I like to talk about is selling high and buying low. And too often these Delawares are so highly priced. Cap rates are very low, high fees, but it's a great way to defer capital gains tax because it's just another form of a 1031.
Yeah. And I will tell you, in theory, a Delaware statutory trust has lots of potential benefits. And I say in theory because I've actually looked into some myself. And the challenge is, again, not only are you, it's not just that you're buying at super compressed rates. You are, of course, but there, as my understanding goes, and maybe you clarify this, but the assets that are going in that, there are some regulations with regard to, like, you're not really allowed to do significant value add real estate in this. I mean, you're basically just, you know, buying, you know, assets that you're not going to do much with, and you're going to pay for that. And obviously there's some fees and stuff, which, you know, if an appropriate syndicator is involved and they can make you money, you don't complain about it. But if they're not really allowed to do much in these trusts in the first place, those are some of the issues that have made it, you know, potentially sort of less attractive to me. The yields are not great, et cetera. But yeah, I mean, there's certainly that's a consideration. And again, you know, and I think you're going to get to this in more detail, but when you have debt, some of these things become more valuable. Let's go on then to the deferred sales trust. This is what you've been wanting to talk about. This is what you do. This is what you believe in. So how does it work? Tell me, I want to use this as an example, Brad. I am coming to you. And I'm going to make it a little challenging for you here because, again, most of the people who are listening to this podcast are real estate investors. Okay. So I have a $5 million asset. I have, you know, let's say I've got, let's say I'm selling for $5 million. But I've only got, you know, $2 million of equity, $3 million in debt. All right. I know how a 1031 works. How would this work with the deferred sales trust? Why don't you sort of take it? You can describe what a deferred sales trust is first, and then how this would work in this scenario.
Great. Excellent. So a deferred sales trust is just a manufactured installment sale. It's like a specialized installment sale.
Okay. So explain that, because not everybody knows what an installment sale is.
So it's where you become the lender and you allow the buyer to borrow from you. So let's imagine this $5 million deal, Buck, which you own. In this scenario, you owe a couple million dollars of debt. You own $3 million of debt. In this scenario, you could potentially loan the new borrow up to $2 million, okay? Mm-hmm. Right, that's your actual equity in the deal. And so you become the lender. And in that scenario, the buyer puts less of a down payment and therefore they get into the deal. And on your side, you get to defer the tax until you receive payments from that. So with the deferred sales trust, We're just actually asking the buyer to come with the full $5 million at closing, and we're asking them to actually buy the asset from the trust. And you're in exchange going to get an installment sale for the $2 million that was left over. We'll pay off your initial three to the bank. So
debt doesn't necessarily make this more difficult.
So it depends on the basis. So let me ask you that. What's your basis on the deal?
Million.
Okay.
So you have I'm going to make it harder.
Yeah. You have what's called $1 million mortgage over basis. So in that scenario, we do need to replace that debt, because what the government says is, Buck, if you close out on this deal or try to do a deferred sales trust, you really already took that income. You took that money out of that refinance mm-hmm. above your basis. Therefore, we're going to tax you as ordinary income. But our solution to that is twofold. Either, Buck, you either pay down the mortgage to the basis, or B, we'll do what's called a bifracture 1031. It's really simple. We move your $2 million equity to a qualified intermediary, okay? Mm-hmm. And we purchase a partial Delaware statutory trust. I'm actually doing a deal right now for a client, very similar. He sold a 18-unit apartment complex in Sacramento for about 2.6, and he has about a $500,000 mortgage over basis. And so we found a Delaware deal, which has about an 82% LTV. So he's going to take it 18% of that $500,000, and he's going to use that to replace the debt in the Delaware. So he has a little bit of equity into that deal, and the remaining can go into the deferred sales trust. The key here is we just replace the debt. And that's what a 1031 does. That's what the Delaware 1031 does. We replace the debt. Remember, 1031 is equal or greater value and also equal or greater debt. So as soon as we take care of that, you're good there. And the rest of it can go into the deferred sales trust. So that would be hopefully the short answer to your question.
Mm-hmm. So, and in that case, would you net end up without a tax bill?
Correct. We call that a zero tax transaction, mm-hmm. right? Where you're 100% tax deferral, and the debt in this scenario is no longer in your name if you're working with the correct Delawares, right? So it's non-recourse. Mm-hmm. And so he's happy there. And for this particular client, he's a baby boomer. He has over $50 million of assets, and he's kind of drowning in the time and the energy to deal with California rent laws and eviction control, which is going on, which is very, very challenging. And so he's just like, Brett, I'm just ready to retire from all this. I have enough wealth. I'm ready to be done. How do I get out of this without getting hammered with tax and enter the deferred sales trust in the Delaware?
So with those sort of partial Delaware statute trust, partial deferred sales trust, basically, on the statutory trust side, you're gonna basically pass on a fraction of the equity and all of the debt to that.
Exactly.
Got it. And then, can you really minimize how much actual money that goes, actual equity goes into the Delaware statutory trust?
So the key is high LTV deals. So the groups that we work with are some of the biggest in the US for owning real estate. And so they actually negotiate with Amazon, right? One mm-hmm. of the biggest companies in the world. This high debt deal, right? Because they're the tenant and they're like basically, they're guaranteeing the lease, right? Mm-hmm. But they're able to negotiate very, very high LTVs. And the key is just to replace that debt. That's really the key. So the answer is high LTV deals, which we already have lined up, which we just move it right in. So he's happy.
Are you capped at the LTV of, of the DST then? Of the Delaware statutory trust?
Of the Delaware deal, exactly. So sometimes it could be an 85% LTV. Sometimes in the past it's been as high as 90. Right mm-hmm. now I'd say we're at 85 to 82% LTVs.
Got it. Depending on still not a bad deal. So you could basically pay your mortgage down a little bit and put less in there, or you could basically, just deal with, whatever LTV component, the equity component, and just put that in a DST and maybe get your, 4 or 5%.
Yeah. On that $82,000. Now it's a zero coupon deal, just so you know. Why? Because they're just using all of the cash flow to pay down the debt. And so, you wouldn't need or not want the cash flow. You couldn't need it because you're going to have to pay it down. But on the deferred sales trust side, right, that's where things change. But think of Amazon is going to pay off your debt over the next 5, 10, 20, years, however long it takes. and then you're going to be debt free there.
And then you're going
to, you saved 30-50% in tax, uh-huh. right?
And so then what happens when that statutory trust at 7 years comes up, they liquidate that.
So typically these Delawares will move you into another Delaware. You know, they'll 1031 mm-hmm. you out, or you could 1031 on your own, right, for that portion and do your own private deal. Just generally speaking, depending on how the structure has been set up. But the ones we work with generally will just, you can roll you into the next one, or you can just take your capital, take your equity and pay the tax. But it wouldn't be ordinary income tax anymore, right? Because your mortgage is now paid down to your basis, right? Mm-hmm. And so it would just be capital gains tax on what you've been deferring.
Got it. And presumably at some point it when you're paying down the debt, at some point it's not a zero coupon deal anymore.
Correct. It starts the cash flow, right? Because yeah. the debt's paid off.
Right. Right. Cool. All right. Let's talk a little bit about the types of assets specifically that you can you can use a deferred sales trust, which is, again, this is sort of your bread and butter. You know, it's a deferred. You're basically an installment sale, right?
Absolutely. And just give a little bit of backstory just for the listeners in the context of this. Grew up in a real estate family, Bay Area, custom homes, started working at Marcus & Millichap, saw the 05-06 market and all people overpaying, taking on too much debt via the 1031s, kind of like what we're seeing right now. Very low cap rates, very low inventory, and just everyone, too much money chasing too few of deals. And fast forward, 08 hit and the music stopped and some of our clients lost everything. Some lost half, and I had to help them pick up the pieces, negotiate with the banks, reassess their marketing plan for their tenants. And a lot of them, I asked the question, I said, why did it happen? They said, well, I felt like it was trapped. I was overpaying. Why? Because I had all this capital gains tax and I felt the 1031 was the only way. And so that's when my manager at Marcus & Millichap brought in a gentleman who's my business partner to talk about the deferred sales trust. And that's where everything changed. I implemented that strategy and my business exploded and grew. And we can't get the message out fast enough now, but we're seeing kind of deja vu happening all over again with a lot of things. So the essence of the deferred sales trust is, like I said before, it's like a Netflix. And what's neat about it is it can do multiple product types. A 1031 only works for investment property, whereas the deferred sales trust works for business sales, works for highly appreciated public stock or private stock, primary homes. We just did an $8.3 million deal for a primary homeowner in Palo Alto who had no way to sell the property because he had too big of a mortgage and too big of a tax. He would have lost everything if it wasn't for the deferred sales trust. Did another deal in Aptos, California for $7.9 million. She's in her 70s and she's looking at, I don't want a 1031. I'm done with this. She had a $2.5 million tax bill. Airbnb business has kind of been shut down with COVID. So she's looking around going, this isn't a good position for me. So she sold, paid off her debt, which is also part of the transformational part of this. You can be debt-free, okay? Which leads into the next part. You can be tax deferred as well as diversified. And we think diversification is the most important thing for high net worth, especially baby boomers right now, because they've made their wealth and they don't want to go through a whole crash all over again. And so what we do is we put them in the deferred sales trust, the equity goes into this trust. And at that point they can invest it wherever they like. They could put it into a syndication deal with Buck. They could put it into their own private deal of their own. They could put it into stocks, bonds, and mutual funds, insurance products. The point is no timing restrictions, when they get it,
they're not taxed on the deployment because it's seen as a loan.
Exactly right. They just carry back 100% financing for the trust. So the deal we just did in Aptos, that was about a $6 million equity. They paid about $1.9 million in debt. And they just have a promissory note written to them for $6 million. Typically, they're structured at 8% based upon their risk tolerance, compounding over a 10-year period of time. Not guaranteed, but then as a team with my business partners, we try to find the best commercial real estate syndicators and operators and financial advisors to manage the money. Now, client note holder has to approve everything. Okay, and then funds don't move without their approval. But then we go to work to try to out earn our fees and try to net them 8%, which is typically around 9.5% over a 10-year period of time. In the meantime, they have no more debt. They're liquid if they want to stay in stocks, bonds, and mutual funds. They're diversified. And then the best part is they can buy real estate at any time. And what I like to say is, Buck, sell high and buy low. And in Minnesota, a gentleman did this in 2006, and he sold a $20 million asset across the street from the Minnesota Vikings Stadium. And he was looking around for a 1031. He's worth a couple $100 million. It didn't make any sense. So he did the deferred sales trust for the first time. 5 years later, that same property he sold, Buck, he bought it back from the bank out of foreclosure. But he bought it back at 60 cents on the dollar, 40% discount. And oh, by the way, with a brand new depreciation schedule, using his deferred sales trust money, all tax deferred. And that's a big, big, big statement. But if you follow those things, you quickly see how this is becomes a transformational exit plan for clients, but also what we believe the best way to create and preserve more wealth because of that timing aspect of this, okay? Yeah. Second part of it, you can delay the payments. Think of it like a 401k. Right now, taxes are set to go up, depending on if Biden gets the tax plan passed, and it could take a year or two to get done. But if that happens, you're going to want something that can delay payments. The deferred sales trust, you don't have to take any payments from it. You can turn off the spigot, and therefore your net income is the same versus other assets that you might have to take cash flow from. You may not have any depreciation to offset it. Therefore, you're having to pay tax. What I want you to think about is like selling a $5 million asset that's maybe producing, let's say, $250,000 per year, and you have no depreciation on it. So you're having to pay tax on that $250,000. Moving into the deferred sales trust, delaying those payments, fast forward in 2 or 3, 4 years, you find a deal that makes sense. You invest into that deal. You get a brand new depreciation schedule. And now you start taking some payments because you can offset it with the depreciation. So we're going like DST 2.0, but these are all the things that we help clients map out.
What's the minimum size transaction that makes sense for a deferred sales trust?
$1 million net of all closing costs for the sale of the asset, and then at least $200,000 to $250,000 of liability deferred. Liability not being confused with gain. Your gain is probably going to need to be somewhere between, let's say, $500,000 and $600,000, and then the net equity needs to be about $1 million to equal a deal that makes sense. And why? Because we have fees, and we want to make sure that your return on your investment makes sense, which we use the rule of 72, which states if we can earn 7%. Over a 10-year period of time, we can double that amount of money. So let's imagine it's a $5 million deal. It's earning 7% net of fees. In 10 years, you didn't take any distribution, Buck. Guess what? That 5 becomes 10 million. If you did that again, that 10 becomes 20. But most of our clients will live off the interest payments, and they'll pay ordinary income tax along the way, but they'll keep that principal intact, okay?
Right.
And that's part of how we map that out. We work with your tax professionals to perfect that.
You mentioned one thing that wasn't clear about it. And you mentioned individuals using this strategy for their homes. So you could actually do this on a personal residence?
Yes, you nailed it, right? So one of the best deals ever was a $26 million primary home sale in Newport Beach. Couples getting a divorce, they cannot do a 1031. They're faced with a $6 million liability. And so they use the deferred sales trust to save $6 million. So what I do is I actually train and coach luxury realtors on how to do this to win more listings, but it's transformational for the client, whereas a 1031 does not work for a primary home. The government gives what's called a 121 exclusion, which if you live there two of the last 5 years, you have 250 single, 500 married. But above and beyond that, you have no other tax strategy except for a charitable remainder trust or a deferred sales trust that we really like. Now you can potentially do an opportunity zone too with that. But the 1031 is only for investment property, which would mean you need to move out of the property, rent it for 2 years, and then 1031 into something which most folks just don't want to do.
Yeah. So in that scenario, it's interesting was what you could do. And obviously I live in here and I live in Montecito, California. So that's a real problem for a lot of people.
Can I tell you about a deal that just closed in Montecito?
Sure.
Well, he's a big time actor. His name is Rob Lowe.
I know.
And he's now a business. Yeah. He's now a client of my business partner. And it was about a $45 million primary home sale. Mm-hmm. And he was very skeptical, like most people are. He hired three attorneys and they were in the Bay Area. And he said, hey, poke holes in this thing. He paid him a lot of money. Okay. And they couldn't poke any holes in it. And he closed on the deferred sales trust. And so you can look that up. Look up Montecito for, I think it was $44.5 million primary home sale. But that is, we think is the lowest hanging fruit. California, highly appreciated primary homes. Folks have been there for 10, 15, 20 years, right? And they feel trapped in their homes. We're doing another deal in Atherton right now for a $9.5 million sale for a primary homeowner. So yeah, that's a big one. If you have a primary home, you should call us right away.
That's very cool. One other thing that makes, so I know a lot of people in my group because we have a lot of, we do a bunch of real estate syndication. We have a bunch of, pretty wealthy individuals who are making sizable investments. If you have a capital gain with recapture as a limited partner in a real estate syndication, do you have any options?
Yes, we just did two deals, one in Phoenix and one in Nevada. It was a syndicator who sold a $20 million asset, and he had 20 or 30 investors. Now those 20 or 30, they had smaller $50,000, $150,000 investments, but his was larger, and his partner. So as a GP, they're able to do their own deferred sales trust without having the whole entity move, which is typically what has to happen in a 1031. This is why most syndicators don't allow 1031 in, and they do not 1031 out, because not everyone's going to agree. So what's unique about it is they put those amounts into their own deferred sales trust. They pay the rest of their investors back. They did another deal, $16 million deal in Phoenix, same thing, put it into the deferred sales trust. And then just yesterday or tomorrow, they're funding an acquisition in Texas, of which they took about 50% of the money that went into the deferred sales trust as a silent partner on the side with them. And so they use the funds, all tax deferred, to when they sold their asset, and now to buy more. So the answer is absolutely. That's probably the
question though is that most of the people we're talking about are on that LP side, that limited partner side, and some of them, we have investors who are in, $500,000, $1 million in a deal, and then they'll be in a portfolio that gets sold, boom, all of a sudden they've got, they might have a $2 million.
It works for them. It can work for LPs or GPs, just to clarify. Just saying most of the time, again, unless they're hitting those numbers. Now, they may have a $500,000 deal, Buck, and then they have another $500,000 deal. Well, we'll still do the deferred sales trust because those two combined will hit that $1 million.
Yeah.
So just realize, but if it's just a one-off deal at 300,000 or 200, we'll say it's too small.
Yeah.
But if you have a couple of these or different assets, you can form one trust and just keep rolling the funds into it. But it absolutely works for LPs as well as GPs.
That's something a number of you should note, especially if you're investors in some of our, WWC stuff, and you've got an accumulation in one of our markets of, $1 million, $2 million, a lot of times we're selling 7 or 8 properties at a time. And, so you could very well be hitting those kinds of, situations. So that's very good to know. Before we go, I do want to, talk a little bit about other options. And it's funny because we were talking offline. Unfortunately, I have one of my listeners who I've been listening to, and she's a really smart entrepreneur. And I hope she doesn't mind me mentioning this, but she ended up with a big partial sale of her business, ended up with $10 million in cash. And then we were trying to figure out what to do. Now, certainly she could have used one of these, she could have used a deferred sales trust, and that would basically solved her problem. Is that right?
Correct. Because we'd have to do it before close of escrow, before all contingencies have been removed. So timing is of the essence here. By the way, we don't charge anything unless and if someone does a deal.
But yeah.
Once it hits the personal bank account, that's what's called actual receipt. It's too late for us. If you're in a 1031 exchange, we can save a failed 1031 exchange because it's not in your hands, right? It's with the QI. Mm-hmm. Remember, that's only investment property. So yeah, business sales, you definitely need to be beforehand. Primary home sales, definitely beforehand. And we need to set that up ideally a couple weeks at least, but definitely before the buyer removes all contingencies.
Got it. The other thing we were talking about is the only other option I can think of for these high capital gains individuals are in opportunity zones. We probably should just mention that for completeness. It sounds like neither you nor I are huge fans of opportunity zones. Do you want to explain what an opportunity zone is and kind of some of the problems that there are there?
Yep. It's another viable opportunity to defer capital gains tax, like a 1031 or charitable remainder trust or Delaware statutory trust, of course, a deferred sales trust. Those are kind of the five that we really focus on, but we really geared towards the deferred sales trust. And the biggest reason is timing, right? Just like the reasons we don't like a 1031, we don't like a lot of the opportunity zones because you're selling high, right? And then 180 days later, you need to park the funds into this fund. And oftentimes those funds are in locations that aren't as desirable. And then B, the values have already been propped up because they're in an opportunity zone. And so you're looking at, you know, just buying higher. The next thing is you're typically tied up for 10 years if you want the really the full benefits of the opportunity zone. So you're illiquid. You're also not diversified. You're typically with one group, maybe two groups, maybe one or two deals. So you oftentimes lose control, right? And so it's just really not, I think, a good time. Now, 5 years ago, Buck, opportunity zone with prices where they were with value add real estate. Hey, I love that, right? The other thing about the opportunity zone is typically it's construction ground up, because you're going to have to basically double the amount you paid for it. So if you bought a $10 million multifamily property that was going to be a value add deal, well, guess what? You need to put another $10 million on top of that. Yeah. So that kind of takes that out of the realm, but you have to buy something that's very, very either construction or just a tear down. So there's just a lot of reasons why I haven't seen
it. And you still have to pay the piper at some point, right?
You have 7 years. Have 7 years to get back the original amount, right? And hopefully you refinance at that point. And any growth, and then you get some 10%, knockoffs along the way. So there are some things there. But again, I just don't like overpaying. I don't like having diversification. I don't like having to have the timing not on my side, because time, Buck, is the one thing we can't get back. Right? We can make and break money, make and break businesses and deals, but we can't get our time back. And so when you can do something that allows you to have time and energy at your own time, your own motivation, your own needs, like the deferred sales trust, we just think, it just far outweighs the pros of the opportunity zone.
Yeah, I'll just add to that in that, my biggest issue with this, really, I think echoing what Brett said, is that, you've got these OZs, these qualified opportunity zones. They were, there was a lot of hype on these things. And immediately what ended up happening is these areas that qualified, and they qualified because they were not very nice areas. The whole idea is to try to, try to turn these communities into decent communities. But the whole opportunity got, the opportunity zone part of it got priced into the property right away. And so it sort of essentially took out the value of investing in an area and trying to make it better, because you're already overpaying for it as if it is in a better area. And the other thing is that, as Brett mentioned, it was ground up construction. So there's inherently a lot more risk in this stuff. And to me, you're essentially taking, hard-earned money that you had a nice liquidation event and putting into something that is in a D-class area. It's construction, and you're banking on, appreciation over a very long period of time. I mean, in that situation, frankly, I'm probably going to personally just, try to decrease how much I, try to overpay expenses for the next year in something, and then take a hit on capital gains, because I'm not really into that. I mean, you're certainly much better off with what Brett's doing for that kind of thing. But the key here, again, is that you have to plan ahead in all of these things. The money can never touch your hands. It has to go to the intermediary. And I think the thing to do is, if you get into these situations, call Brett. If you think that there's an opportunity where you may be getting $1 million, $2 million of profit at least, and you want to figure out how to, if there's an opportunity to not pay, taxes by using this tool, at least contact him. So with that, Brett, how do we get a hold of you?
Thanks, Buck. Appreciate it. You can go to capitalgainstaxsolutions.com if you are a high net worth individual and looking at this. You can also search that on YouTube. We have our podcast, Capital Gains Tax Solutions, which I believe you'll also enjoy as well. And the, if you're a professional, like a luxury realtor, a commercial real estate broker, syndicator, or financial advisor, you can go to experttaxsecrets.com and you can learn about how to use the deferred sales trust to add massive value for your clients and grow your business.
That was Expert Tax. What was that? Expert
Tax. ExpertTaxSecrets.com.
Okay, got it. Very good, Brett. Thank you again for being on a Wealth Formula podcast, and I'm sure we'll have you on again in the near future.
Thank you, Buck. My pleasure.
We'll be right back. Welcome back to the show, everyone. So I was sort of surprised about some of the things you could do here myself. I didn't realize you could really do anything about capital gains on personal homes, but it's, you know, it's good to know. It's good to know that you can do that. Not that it helped me any. I lost 25% on the home in the North Shore of Chicago that I had that I bought in 2012. So anyway, listen, a few comments on cryptocurrency and asymmetric risk. You know, I still see this as the beginning of a substantial Bitcoin bull run. I think it's just the beginning. I think Ethereum will go with it. I think some of the other alternative coins will. I do think that a lot of people got burned so badly last time on alts that not all of them are going to recover the same. So I think it's going to be a little bit different game, but I still think there's an opportunity to make money. So if you want relatively less risk but exposure to upside, you know, of this bull market, it might make sense to look at potentially buying some Bitcoin or Ethereum. I do think that Ethereum probably has some possibly greater growth potential in the next, you know, in the immediate future, because it's still lagging from its all-time highs. I do think that it's wise, though, if you just are kind of casually entering this game, to pick a sell number before you buy, so that you know you don't get overly you don't become kind of crazy, and then all of a sudden you've made all this money, and then, you know, God forbid, all of a sudden the market comes crashing down, and it you know, who knows what's going to happen? You've seen it happen multiple times now, but you basically got to figure out your buy number is what it is, and say, okay, if I get to this number, I sell. And I made some money, and, you know, as a casual rider of a bull market, that's kind of what I would recommend. Although I'm not making any recommendations, but I think that that's probably wise. Now, I don't actually own as much Bitcoin as I used to, unfortunately, and that's a long, disappointing story. But I do have some. I do not intend to sell for years, and will plan to, you know, accumulate monthly as a hedge. And ultimately is a bet that it's going to take on a greater meaning, the global economic system, in the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. As a reminder, you can get exposure to Bitcoin and Ethereum through the Grayscale Trust as well. Their tickers are GBTC and ETHE. This is not investment advice. I'm just sharing you information. Another thought, and again, it's just a thought on asymmetric risk that I've been thinking about. You know, financial thinking in your situation should be dynamic, right? I mean, you have some fixed goals and what you want to accomplish, but as your wealth grows, sometimes you need to, you know, reevaluate. We've always suggested that to limit your asymmetric risk investments, you know, 5%, maybe 10% at most, so that, you know, you can hit some home runs or strike out, not worry about it. And some of you, though, are getting to the point where you really you're making a lot of money. You've made a lot of money. You know, the investor club has added to that. For you accredited investors, at what point, if any, does it make sense to up that percent of asymmetric risk portfolio? Okay, so bear with me. I mean, you know, I know I think boring is good. That's right. But the beauty of owning assets like real estate is that they continuously are, you know, they're They throw off cash, and you can also have the benefit of the principal growth. Now, if you're in the position where you've got more recurrent income than you need, maybe it's okay to be more aggressive, okay? So here's where the thought comes from me. I mean, I don't talk too much about my own personal goals, but, you know, someday I would love to be a centimillionaire, right? So I have a net worth of over $100 million. I won't get into why, but I think that's sort of a long-term goal for me. Now, if I kept doing what I'm doing right now for the next several years, I think I'd get there without doing anything terribly risky. But it will not be nearly as quickly as it would if I made, you know, probably some bold bets. Right now, you know, I can afford to do that, so maybe I should. I'm not saying I'm going to, but I'm just letting you know how my own thinking process is evolving a little bit on this matter. And again, at that point, then the devil becomes, in the details even more, because it's sort of like, okay, well, then what exactly are those asymmetric risk things? And the point is, you can make your own decisions on these matters and, figure out what makes sense for you. But I think I'm just thinking out loud, and maybe it's a steroid I'm taking, so take it for what it's worth. I would just say that, you know, I think it's true that as our wealth grows, we have to constantly reevaluate if the trajectory we are on provides the realistic ability of actually achieving our goals. And if it doesn't, then, you know, we have to reassess, reevaluate. It doesn't mean that you're herky and jerky. You may say, okay, I know that if I get to the point where, hey, I'm good, I'm going to make, $300,000-$400,000 a year from whatever residual stuff I'm getting in my investments and that kind of thing, that after that, you know, I can be more aggressive with the investments that I make. Not like you're going to go 100% into, you know, this asymmetric stuff, but that you do give yourself license to know that is something that you might want to do in the future. Anyway, that's enough for my steroid rambling. This is Buck Joffrey with Wealth Formula Podcast, signing off.
Thank you for listening to the Wealth Formula Podcast. Visit us on the web at wealthformula.com. The information contained in this podcast are opinions, not fact. As always, consult your own financial team before making any investment. See you next time.
Buck Joffrey here from Sapio with Buck Joffrey. Aging might become reversible over the next 10 to 20 years. It's already being done in lab animals, so it's just a matter of time. Our challenge? To be healthy enough for when that time comes. As a former scientist and surgeon myself, my goal is to figure out how to do that and to share it with you. I wrote a book called Living Longer for Busy People that you can download for free at sapiopodcast.com. You'll be amazed at just how a few daily adjustments can add years of a healthy life for you. Again, download it for free, sapiopodcast.com.